This is an ABC podcast.
This is Stories from the Pacific with Bobby McComber on ABC Radio Australia.
Hello, I'm Bobby McComber. Thanks for joining me for Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. Stories from the Pacific is a conversation with someone you may or may not have heard of. A Pacific Islander who has seen and done amazing things. And today, that incredible person is Fanau Woolleybully. Fanau grew up watching her brothers and cousins play soccer from the sidelines. When they were short on players, she could join in. Since then, she's gone on to represent Fiji in soccer, competing at the Pacific Games, and officiating FIFA World Cups across the globe. Fanau has a new outlook on soccer these days, which she's enjoying once again from the sidelines. Welcome, Fanau.
Thank you, Bobby. Thank you for having me on this space.
Can you tell me a little bit about where you grew up in Fiji?
I grew up in Savu Savu, which is a district on the second biggest island of in Fiji, Vanuatu. I grew up there, had my education, high school and everything. And then I moved over to the capital to pursue further studies in tertiary education.
What was sport like growing up for you, Fanau, especially in Savu Savu? You mentioned that you moved, obviously, to Suva for education. But what was it like as a kid growing up there, and what did sport give you in the community?
It's one of the tourism towns, so I guess that is important in terms of the kind of people and the culture that we have. It's very multicultural, it's multiracial, and just having, you know, the influence of tourism, people are more open-minded. So you will find girls like me growing up back then open to participate in anything, be it sports or any other career, with our parents and being open-minded about it. So sports was definitely one of the spaces that we participated in. So football was there every weekend. It was a fun space that definitely go and, you know, cheer on our family members. It was fun, but there were also other sports as well, and we were encouraged to participate.
Can you tell me a little bit about your family growing up in Savu Savu?
There's five siblings in the family, and we were definitely involved in sports. That being said, my dad, being strict with education, he also ensured that, yes, he encouraged us to play sports, but education was also key. But I feel like the sports space allowed us to develop, you know, other social skills. For me as a woman, it empowered me just to participate in other things as I grew up. But yes, my family, we were always involved in sports. I mean, growing up, I was sort of the least sports person in the family. I never really, in primary school, all my siblings would qualify right to the national level, and I would represent the school and like lose out. I would not qualify beyond the district level. I was more the bookworm.
So going back to when you first started playing football, you were allowed to join in when there weren't enough players. Is that right? With your brothers and cousins? Can you tell me a bit about that?
Sometimes we would go to my grandma's place, and you know, there was this community of kids who would play, and I was allowed, or you know, they would welcome me if I would want to play. But like I said, I would just sit out and read or do some other boring stuff that others don't want to do. But yes, if they have a team, and sometimes my brothers would call me up or cousins call me up, can you, like, you know, balance off the team? I would be thrown in goalie. But that's where I started to pick up the passion for the game. I mean, I was exposed to many sports, but it's my nature to, like, if there's five different challenges, I would choose the most difficult just because I want to challenge myself. And I felt like soccer was that thing in sports, because to play with your foot and to be, you know, just be as skillful as your hands. Like, I played netball and all the other stuff. I found it was a challenging, and then I admired people who could just do it. And so that's how I kind of just naturally went into the football space, because I had the passion and the interest to see people just master the skill.
You played a number of sports growing up, but when did you first start playing football?
Growing up, you know, in school, we had netball, we had athletics and stuff like that that I would be involved in. But football was just a... Back then, there was no women's team, and neither was it like a sport in school like you have in the US or maybe in Australia and other developed countries where you see it, both gender would play the sport. It was just mostly male-dominated. When the idea of having women's sports or football sports, when I came to tertiary level, because I had played it to some level, I guess I had the skills and the know-how and the knowledge of the game, and that allowed me to maybe make it to the national team.
So your uni coach, tell me a little bit about him. Did he go on to do more things in coaching as well?
Yes. So when I was when I finished high school, I went to teachers college, and that's when I was first introduced to like a formal team, a district team. At the time, Fiji Football was trying to develop women's sports, and I think the year after, because they were having the Pacific Games, so they sort of had to form a team. So they had the district teams playing for the IDC that year. To get a woman's team into the district, they just came to the teachers' college because I guess it was an accumulation of females. It was easy to just progress in that way. You know, a bunch of us friends just did it. We didn't think much of it, but we did join, and he saw something in me, I guess, because the year later when he was promoted as national coach, he was a former national goalkeeper and captain, Tangi Van Olangi. He saw something, I guess. And then when they did form 2003 South Pacific Games, at the time I was stationed out in Savo Savo as a high school maths teacher. But he contacted me and said, you know, he wanted me in the team, and I got released from Ministry of Education and came to join the national team. And that was my first national outing.
Now, you've mentioned this briefly, but this athletic ability clearly runs in your family. Can you tell me what national representatives you have in your family?
They were definitely great athletes. Like William did football, and you know, he went to the nationals for the blue ribbon events, 100 and 200. I had my sister Mariana, who now resides in Australia. She was like an all-rounder athlete. The third sibling Thomas went on to again an all-rounder in athletics and rugby and football, but then he took up football and went to represent the nation in many international competitions. And the youngest one, Albert, took up rugby. I guess he's quite broad and his build, I guess, didn't allow him to play football. But he finished year 12 in Savo Savo. He got a part-time scholarship to Hamilton Boys High School in New Zealand. So he moved over a rugby scholarship and education as well. And then from there, he played for Reds for a while. He was shortlisted into the All Blacks Sevens team. And then he moved over to France to pursue a professional career in rugby. And he's now back in Australia.
Quite an amazing family you have there. Were your parents athletic as well?
I think my mom was more so than my dad, I guess. She was a sprinter. The elders back home used to tell me about it. She started her family pretty young as well, but she was an athlete. And my dad, I think he played a bit of something. I'm not too sure, but maybe it was genetic. But I think as much as they promoted, you know, that we pursued our education, they also never restricted us from participating in various sports. So that helped in, you know, the coordination and the agility and all these other skill sets that we were able to pick up from various sports.
So when you did start to take sport a bit more seriously, how did your parents respond then? Were they supportive?
I would say I stood on the shoulders of giants. They've always been supportive. They've always supportive of whatever we did. You know, and I say to parents who's listening in, is to know you, as something as my dad used to say, is, you know you don't know your kid by name, but by their heart. So if they find what their gift is, they find what their skills, what are they good at, and just support them with that. Even when I started with football, playing football at the national level, there was a stigma still associated with it here in Fiji. I mean, we're talking about two decades ago, but just having parents who have open-minded, they didn't see this as a male-dominated sport. It was just a sport, and you just yourself. And so because you know you have that kind of support.
You're listening to Stories from the Pacific. I'm Bobby McCumber, and joining me is former FIFA referee Finau Vulivuli. In 2003, you earned a place in Fiji's national women's football team. Can you tell me how that came about?
Yes, in 2003, I was teaching out of Savo Savo. So I only played my first official team was the Nasino district team. Every district had a men's football team, but women's football was not huge at the time. There were some districts that had it. Most didn't. And it was just really budding. The inter-district at the time, they wanted every district to have a women's team. So I went into the Nisini women's team, and that was it. I forgot about it. I was posted straight after that back to Savo Savo when I was teaching out of there. But I think it was really because of my coach, who I was lucky enough that the coach that coached me in the district team was also appointed the year after for the national women's team. And he, like I mentioned, he was, you know, a well-respected individual here in Fiji, being a former captain of the men's national team, former goalkeeper. He was one of the top coaches. So he just reached out. I think he was given, you know, like most coaches, you given the right to select your team. So I guess he saw the talent in me the previous year. So he contacted the Ministry of Education and got through to me and asked if I wanted to join the national team. And yeah, that's where the journey began.
And how did it feel when he asked you? Were you surprised? Were you happy?
All those emotions. Growing up, I was like the least. So I, you know, I was like, am I going to be like a Fiji rep? Like, is this real? Like, yeah, I was trying to soak it all in. I was in school and I got this call from the principal's office. And, you know, he called me up and said, you got a call from the education in Fiji football. So I went there, you know, not knowing what is this about. And then next thing I heard the coach's voice, like, hey, coach, what's up? And then he told me, you know, I'm formulating the team. I'm the coach. I've been appointed. And I want you to join the team. I was like, oh, yes, I would love to join the team. Like, I didn't know, you know, whether I was good enough for anything. But I think when opportunities present itself, you got to grab it with both hands.
Absolutely. What was it like competing in the Pacific Games whilst playing football for Fiji?
I came into camp. Most of the girls were already there and they've been training for a while. Mine took a bit of time because I definitely had a full-time job. I had to get the appropriate leave and all that in order. So when I came, they were already in camp. With certain things, when you come on the platform, you need to know what you can bring to the table. And for me, I knew that, like, you know, my skill set would not be as good as my colleagues, but fitness was something I could bring. So I worked hard on that. I really worked hard on that. And so when I came in, the day I came into camp, it was like a fitness test straight away. And I did so well. And like they said, first they told me I was going to come as a trial to see if I was okay, you know. But I guess I aced the fitness test and they just roped me in.
You spent a lot of time watching your brothers play. Tell me, did they return the favor?
Oh, yes, definitely. But I think when we came to national level, my brother was also in the national team. He had his programs. Whenever they could, they would be there. But definitely over the table, you know, we would talk about, because he was so more experienced, he would tell me about certain things when he had the opportunity to watch my game. In the 2003, we were both representing Fiji at the Pacific Games. So it was like an awesome moment for the family, like a proud moment. But I definitely had time to learn a lot from him because he had been through the age group and all that. But the support system in the family, I think that pushed me to reach the heights that I did. There was never a moment I felt like I didn't have the support system.
How did that feel, family side by side representing Fiji at the Pacific Games?
While it was a proud moment, I think it was a humbling moment too. A time that we could reflect and look back at our journey, because we definitely came out of humble beginnings, but to reach that level of success was a proof and a testament of the sacrifices that everyone, especially my parents, had put in. Coming from a Pacific island, coming from rural background, coming from very humble beginning with little to nothing, but that if you work hard and you put in the effort and you get those opportunities and you grab it with both hands, that yes, I guess it was very humbling for us, but we were proud, and I can tell with my teammates they were happy for us.
In Fiji, games are always officiated by men. So, what was it like when you first saw female referees at the 2004 Olympic qualifiers?
It sparked something in me that I really wanted to get into it. I mean, I was being realistic. I wasn't the best player in the team, but I knew I was, you know, very analytical when it came to the game. I would understand what the coach would explain in terms of systems of play, you know, and stuff like that. But in terms of execution, I was not that physically skillful or anything. So when I saw them refereeing and, you know, I looked at, okay, you just need to be fit, which I have. You just need to run. Position yourself well, and you need to understand the laws of the game. I felt like I checked the boxes, and it just got my interest and got me thinking at the time, because we did not have any female match officials in Fiji or the region. Just seeing them for the first time, and it's a whole panel of Asian referees that came down to officiate. It was, I think it just opened up an interest in me that I really wanted to pursue.
You're listening to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia.
Now, not long after you returned from the 2004 Olympic qualifiers, you started a women's football team in your village. Can you tell us about that?
Actually, it was the district competition. They wanted the Savu Savu, which is the district, to have a women's football team. So I was contacted by the CEO and he asked if I could facilitate because I was a national player. And I was like, oh, okay, sure. And at the time, I also had a colleague of mine at school who was a Peace Corps volunteer. She was out of Arkansas State and she played at the state level. So it was great. I had a colleague and a friend that, you know, we could start off together. But because football was new in Fiji, let alone in a rural area with its many challenges and stigma, it was easy to work out of the high school system and the students, because they already had the discipline. We had them all in one area. It was easy to organize it straight after school. So that's what we did with the Savu Savu team. We contacted another colleague from the neighboring school and asked him if he could identify girls who were interested in forming the Savu Savu team. So we got a group of girls from the two neighboring schools in the main district areas. I think we helped change the mindset of girls can play anything.
You mentioned stigma before. Can you tell me about some of the challenges that you faced while setting up the women's team?
In football alone, by law, you cannot have a team less than 7 players. So you have an on-field team that has to be 11. Goalkeeper and the outfield players, they make 11. So the minimum players that needs to be on the team is 7. For the first 2 weeks, we had only 5 players. So we could not officially form a team. Because I taught in Savu Savu and my family is from there, I sort of had that reputation and trust from the family and the community to allow the girls to participate. So that's how they slowly trickle through. And I remember quite clearly when we had our first sessions, you know, you would have people park and just watch with sort of a curious, inquisitive mind. Okay, what is going on? Women playing football, you know, with those, all those questions. But I, you know, I knew that it was a way to break barriers. I knew it was a way to, you know, get girls to just participate and come out of their comfort zone and empower them. Also from that team that we took, 2 of them went on to represent Fiji for the under 20s.
Oh, that's wonderful. Always so proud when you can see them move on to representing their country. From there, your sporting career took a bit of a turn. Can you tell us about that?
So because I participated in the Olympic qualifiers in 2004, we were sponsored by the British High Commission here in Suva. And they had a lot of equipment in, you know, in terms of bags and boots and stuff and like that. That was collected. I mean, the boots, the cleats were collected after we played. It was kept in the Fiji football camp for future participants. But when they asked me to form this team, I negotiated with them that I've got nothing out here. I need support. And these girls are playing for the first time. They don't have boots, let alone they haven't worn boots and tried it out. So I was trying to negotiate with them. I knew at the back of my mind that there were cartons of boots in camp that they could just ship across for our teams to use. So that was what I tried to negotiate. And luckily for me at the time, there was a Fiji football referees cadet, an entry-level referees course that was conducted back in the district. So when I turned up, my first referees director, Chandra Sagran, he looked at me and he said, yeah, sure, we can talk about that, but can you sit into the course here? And I think you might like it. Looking at his personality, he's also like an open-minded person. So I guess I was lucky to come at hit opportunities at a time when there were people who saw things differently. So the referees director at the time, he was probably looking to expand it beyond just males. We did not have any female referees at the time. So I did join in, you know, not thinking much about it. But I guess my experience as a national player and also my friend's experience as a state player from Arkansas, we excelled and we topped the class of almost 30 something. And from there, he just didn't look back. He said, you are joining refereeing, like more like a directive. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. And yes, I guess sometimes when I look back, I was just lucky there were certain people. At the time, a senior, one of the very elite and senior referees in the country, he got posted to as a bank manager into the district. So he became my mentor and my trainer, and he's the one that really brought me out as a cadet.
Was there a stigma toward women who refed games?
I think I was lucky in the sense, like when I started this interview, I mentioned about Savu Savu and the culture that it has. I think tourism plays a big part in terms of people's outlook in life and everything else, and their perception. When I started to progress and going to other districts, there would be passing comments or there would be like those facial expressions that people judge you before they even see what you can do. And for me, that was like, I embraced it as a challenge. I'm going to show you what I can do. I'm going to show you that girls can do it. It fueled me to perform better and to prove, because I knew there was a lot on my shoulders as the first female to pave the way for, you know, others who would come after me.
Did players listen when you were refereeing?
It was my job to execute by the laws of the game. And some of the tools of refereeing is not to speak as much. So I guess in the beginning, as you're a cadet, there's this natural tendency for people to challenge you. But refereeing is sort of, it comes a lot with your personality and how you handle, because you're handling 22 players on the field, let alone the angry coaches on the bench. So it comes a lot also with, you know, your people skills, when you need to flame up and when you need to calm down. But at the end of the day, it's about you ensuring the game is played within the laws of the game.
How did the crowd respond?
Initially, by the time I reached at the highest level, it was already news, because I think because I came as the first female referee, I started as a cadet within my district, and then I got promoted to B division, which was like the second division for men. So I started to referee within the whole Vanua Levu districts, within the competitions. And by the time I went to the A division, it was, you know, it wasn't like fresh news. People already knew that there was a female referee. I was first nominated as an assistant referee, and on the verge of getting my FIFA badge as an assistant referee, Australia left. The Oceania Confederation moved across to Asia. We had female referees out of Australia, but when they shifted in Confederation, we had no one. From what I heard is that the main body, Oceania, you know, spoke to Fiji Football and asked, you know, you've got a great referee. Let's move her into the center rather than on the lines. By the time I went to the center and being the captain of the team, I knew everybody's role well. I had mastered everybody's role, so it allowed me to understand my team and work well with them and complement the work that we do.
In Australia, umpires aren't always respected by crowds and players. Is that something that you experience in the Pacific?
Yes, definitely. You have more referees on the stand than in the field, I would say. So everyone, you know, having their different level and knowledge of the game will have an opinion about it. You do get people who don't agree to your decisions. They call you out. For me, I've always known, okay, there's people who's not going to agree with my decision, but I go into the mentality that I'm the expert, I'm the best, and I'm going to execute it the way I know how. And yes, people can say whatever they want. So when I go in there, I mentally block everything and I execute my game to the utmost best. Let the crowd say as you wish. You need to focus and know that you are the best and you're the expert and you're going to execute it accordingly.
Well said. You've gone on to ref at FIFA World Cups around the world. Did you ever imagine finding yourself in this role?
Definitely not. You know, like I said, I love challenges and I raise the bar. What can I achieve next? Definitely coming from a developing country, you can raise the bar, but there's some certain realities about opportunities. When I got called up, when I got my FIFA badge in Oceania, the first tournament that I was appointed to was in Algarve Cup in Portugal. It was a friendly international game that most national teams, top national teams that goes to the World Cup participate in. It's organized by FIFA and the FIFA refereeing committee. So I knew that it was like, it's used as a stepping stone to see whether you're good enough to be selected for the FIFA event. So when I got that first appointment, you know, like, we get limited opportunities. You got to be prepared every moment. You never know when the door opens for opportunity. You got to, you know, you can't start preparing when the door opens. You have to be prepared. And that is something I worked on. Also coming from the region, you know, there was certain, I watched EPL a lot. I watched a lot of international games just to prepare, to know, you know, learn from the positioning that the referees were making, learning from, you know, the way they would, you know, make calls on certain and try to understand it. I would ask a lot of questions. I know my instructors would get fed up of me, but that's how you grow. You have to just be that perfect to be at that level. And I never stopped dreaming. And like, if it happened, I had to be ready, and so I prepared accordingly. I did really work hard for it.
Now, after an incredible career that took you all over the world, you decided to retire. Why was that?
Everyone retires at some point, I guess, in every career and sports. I think that is more limiting because, of course, you know, you need to be physically fit, you need your physical self. But I guess I was fortunate that I started quite young. I hit the international stage quite young, and I went to my very first FIFA tournament, FIFA World Cup, at the first under-17 World Cup in New Zealand, and that was in 2000. I was only 26 at the time, and for a very good number of years, I would go off to the FIFA events as the youngest centre referee. Even though I started going in that area, I knew that at some point I would retire, And it was a question of when I would retire. Also, what are the goals in life that I wanted? After a little more than a decade, in 2016, I got selected for 2 World Cups in Jordan for the under-17 and back-to-back with Papua New Guinea for the under-20s. And then I came back. And there was like, I've done so many under-17 and, you know, so many age group World Cups. By then, I was checking the box. And in 2017, I started my family as well. And so, you know, my perspective, I've always had, you know, other goals in life, and I've always wanted a family as well. I remember in 2018, they invited me back to France, and my son was only 5 months. And I was like, no, I can't go. He's too young. I don't want to leave him. And they said, oh, by the way, there's an Uruguay in under-17 end of the year, and he would be 11 months. I started to ask the question of, you know, what is it you want to do in life? Do you want to do this all over again? And for me, my answer was no. I knew I have given enough. And I was like in my mid-30s, hitting my 40s. I didn't want to be like running on the field at 40. I knew I could play other roles as a supporting role to the young ones who were coming through. Not only did I choose to have a moment, a motherhood moment, and having my career off the field, but also I was able to come in as an instructor initially and support the girls and the football around the region. I think every day you got to look back and be proud of the choices you made. And I don't think, even though I finished on a very high, I felt like I came off at the right time for me.
You've officiated, as you mentioned, at multiple World Cups during your time as a referee. Tell me for now, do you have any favourite moments?
Definitely for any match official, for any player, the biggest moment is, you know, getting that call that you're going to the World Cup, the main World Cup. And for me, that's always going to be my moment, because not everyone around the world gets selected for the main World Cup. So the Germany 2011 World Cup, would I say, be my pinnacle moment. And I would savor that moment because it's just a culmination of all the hard work and the sacrifices, not just for me, but those who supported me along the way.
I think it's fair to say that sport has shaped your career. Although you've retired, how important is football to you?
It's something I'm passionate about, not just football, like sports in general. I've been involved more in the sports for development space. So it's using the sports as a tool to impact change, especially like for Fiji and the developing countries, and using sports as a platform to address certain social issues that may be a bit taboo, or we would not like to, or it's not comfortable to discuss. Sports can be like soft diplomacy to address these issues.
What has sport given you?
Well, first and foremost, I would say it's changed me personally, because I'm vocal now and I'm, you know, I can speak in public, but it took me a long journey to get here. I'm an introvert, and even though that's hard to believe, but, you know, I have my own moments, and the sports, especially with my confidence level, it has really helped me in that space. I grew up a very shy and timid girl. Taking part in sports, you know, I found the confidence to just be able to voice my opinions, be able to advocate for things I'm passionate about, but also using it to encourage other girls. And so when I formed even the high school girls team, we went for the inter-district tournament. It was an opportunity to take the girls and show them what the world was, because when we formed that first team, 80% of them had not been out of the village or out of the district. I think from those moments, I knew I could use sports as a tool to empower women, to empower girls, and not just girls and women, but really anyone who needs that empowerment and make the change.
Thanks very much for now for joining me on Stories from the Pacific. That was For Now Bully Bully, speaking from Fiji. You've been listening to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. And if you know someone whose story you'd like to hear, email me at storiesfromthepacific@abc.net.au. I'm Bobby McCumber, and thanks for being with me today. This episode of Stories from the Pacific was produced on the lands of the Menang Noongar and also the lands of the Kaurna people.